Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
It's the Martin Luther King holiday weekend, and normally there's a multitude of ways to participate in the Twin Ports, but things aren't quite normal.
Unfortunately, you know, we're not marching this year. We're not participating in, you know, the MLK breakfast, but it's still a call to action.
Plus, a locally produced documentary reflects on Dr. King's words with the multi-generational voices of Twin Ports elders and their adult children.
I've always tried to, like, follow in her footsteps of, you know, like, having empathy for other people. And I've been trying to think about, oh, what has my mom gone through?
All that in the regional news and review after this.
News and issues from a superior point of view.
It's the Martin Luther King holiday weekend, and normally there's a multitude of ways to participate in the Twin Ports, but things aren't quite normal.
Unfortunately, you know, we're not marching this year. We're not participating in, you know, the MLK breakfast. But it's still a call to action.
Plus, a locally produced documentary reflects on Dr. King's words with the multi-generational voices of Twin Ports elders and their adult children.
I've always tried to, like, follow in her footsteps of, you know, like, having empathy for other people. And I've been trying to think about, oh, what has my mom gone through?
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Normally, for Martin Luther King Day each year, the Duluth branch NAACP hosts a variety of events for the Twin Ports official observance of the day, from the annual free breakfast to a youth talent show and musical performances to an interfaith service and a community march reminiscent to those led by King. But this year, we're not quite normal, thanks to the pandemic, yet some of those activities are still happening online. Here to tell us about them, as well as why we're celebrating them, are Classy Dudley, president of the Duluth Branch NAACP, and Branch Executive Board Member Doug Bowen Bailey. Welcome to Simply Superior, Classy and Doug.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So what are the highlights?
So the Duluth branch is sponsoring two events, one that's taking place on Sunday at 4 p.m., which is a community read of the letter from a Birmingham jail. And so that will be accessible from a Facebook Live feed that you can access from our website. Also, there will be on Monday at 11 a.m., we're doing a premiere of a documentary entitled Dr. King's Words in Action, that's looking at Black empowerment through the generations. And so it's a documentary with interviews from people from the Twin Ports looking at how kind of quotes can inspire the continued action towards justice and towards living out Dr. King's vision. So we're really excited about that happening as well on Facebook Live.
As well as on this program coming up, we will have the documentary, the audio. And, of course, for the full video, which means seeing the pictures you can't quite see on the radio, you can go to the presentation again at Facebook Live on Monday, and we'll give you all the URLs in a moment. Classy, what do you want to highlight for this year?
I think every year what the Duluth branch does and the community does in general is we have this huge participation from the community at large. And this year and every year going forward, we always want to highlight the accountability that the Duluth branch is pushing forward with our partners, our community, everybody who collaborates with us, our politicians, everybody, because it's important to know that, like, while MLK Day is extremely important and we value the knowledge and wisdom that MLK has to spread on us each year, that it's not just a day in the year, but it's every day. So we always do a call to action and saying that this is a year-round approach. And if you're not hearing about the issues within equity within our community, it's because you're not involved. And becoming an NAACP member is one part of it, but we actually need action. We need volunteers. We need support. We need community mobilization. We have a lot of issues within our community that can be fixed and need to be fixed. So I think highlighting the accountability piece with our community and mobilizing and staying active and not just celebrating once a year.
Can I throw something in there too, Robin?
Absolutely.
Yeah, because I think too, like, you know, on Martin Luther King Day, we lift up Dr. Martin Luther King, but he was part of a movement and he was surrounded by lots of other people who were a part of that. And so I think this is also a day to lift up other voices and other perspectives. And so I think it's important, as Classy said, is that this is really a call to action to all of us to take part in that.
Mm-hmm. Why is this day special? Because ever since, unfortunately, a year and a half ago, the murder of George Floyd, we're in a national or international racial reckoning. So is there something different we do on King Day that we don't do any other day?
It shouldn't be the case that it's different today. This should be kind of perhaps a recommitment to the work that we do the rest of the year. But I think it's important for us to recognize that these issues are important to the entire community, not just on Martin Luther King Day, not just in February during Black History Month. This is part of us working towards being the community that serves all of us. And I think that's a big part of the Duluth NAACP's mission, is to kind of uplift the community in a way that certainly supports, you know, Black, Indigenous, and people of color who live in the Twin Ports in the Northland area, but that really translates into a community that's better for all of us as well.
Mm-hmm. This year is the first year that the city of Superior is actually celebrating or commemorating it with an official holiday. It's been marked each year by proclamation, and a lot of jurisdictions have done that, but it was actually passed by the city council in October. So this will be the first year. And ironically, again, it's a year in which, although city workers will have the day off, people aren't able to go to the activities in person. Let's talk about celebrating. I went back and forth in talking to you just now between saying commemorating and observing and celebrating. Which is it? Is it a day of celebration? We do obviously honor Martin Luther King.
Yeah, it's all of three of those things. And I, again, just want to push that it's a day of action. Unfortunately, you know, we're not marching this year. We're not participating in, you know, the MLK breakfast. But it's still a call to action for everybody who says that they are an ally to the issues that people of color face daily here.
All right.
Just the other kind of logistical thing is, you know, usually we have a community breakfast where we do the live stream from the event down in Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And we had only gotten information about how you could buy a $25 ticket. But we just got information that's now on our website, and we put it on our Facebook page where the Duluth community can register for free. And that goes from 8:45 until 10:30 in the morning. So if people are interested in another event that they can live stream and see, that's available as well.
And that's on Monday the 17th, which you're saying you can see online for free. Are they still having that event in the Twin Cities in person?
No, it's not in person.
Yeah, you have to make your own breakfast.
Right. This is the world we're living in now and what we have to deal with. So it seems like I'm asking that of everybody. Wait a minute, is this virtual or is this real? One more time, tell us the URLs or the platforms where we can view everything.
You can get all the information at DuluthNAACP.org/MLK.
All right. We've been talking to Classy Dudley, president of the Duluth Branch NAACP, and branch executive board member Doug Bowen Bailey. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Always great to hear from you, Robin.
Coming up, the audio version of the locally produced documentary, Dr. King, Words in Action. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. As you just heard, one of the online programs for this year's Twin Ports Martin Luther King Day celebration is a documentary produced by Jeremy Gardner for the Duluth Branch NAACP. It includes commentary on the words of Dr. King by Twin Ports activists and regular folks given from a multi-generational perspective. That means pairing together some elders and their adult children to share their thoughts, as you'll soon see. Here is an audio version of Dr. King, Words in Action.
Now, In a sense, we have come to our nation's capital to cash a check.
Xavier Davis, reading a passage by Martin Luther King.
When the architects of our great republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was bound to hear. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would guarantee the inalienability rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on its promissory note, insofar as her citizens of color are concerned.
Systematically, we've been at a disadvantage educationally.
Jamar Kirk.
With misinformation and the misteachings kind of just pointing us in a direction not beneficial for our growth, health-wise, financially, just to be assets in society. So some of those barriers are definitely the system, not having a connection with the culture and the educational system, mixing those two to bring us to a stronger position in the community.
When Dr. King speaks about the fierce urgency of now,
Christina Trock.
He was speaking about not taking action and it causing consequences later and for future generations. That's playing out even today, because some of the movements that came out of the civil rights movement, some of the actions that came out of the civil rights movement were positive at the time, but we're finding in different communities it can be a detriment. And segregation was one of those things that we were talking about. When you have a low population of students of color being segregated from each other, they were finding that the students in those classrooms weren't doing as well as their counterparts. So some of the actions that we're taking to close some of those gaps are K-3 education. A study out of the state of Minnesota looked at third grade math and reading skills. And so there's a push to funnel more resources towards those grades in order to close the achievement gap between kindergarten and third grade.
In general, the entire educational system is primarily by white people, for white people, from the white perspective.
Blair Paulus.
And that damages, in my opinion, everybody within that system, the white people as well, but in particular, you know, African heritage and indigenous people who watch this going on around them, who are being told that this is the way to think and this is the way to act and these are the people to emulate, and then to eventually realize that this is not who I am. And so what does that say about me then, if I am not one of these people who I'm being taught are the people to be?
I would say they're not telling them the full truth.
Xavier Davis.
I mean, yes, some of the history that they're teaching them, yes, it's true. But then also you can see, like, a lot of other people had hands in creating this country. Colored people. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to admit it.
On some positions, cowardice asks, is it safe?
Christina Trock with a quote from Dr. King.
Expediency asks, is it politic? Vanity asks, is it popular? But conscience asks, is it right? And there comes a time when we must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but one must take it because it is right.
It's hard because I feel like, sadly, the way, like, you know, white people are being, you know, raised in these times, and then black people are being raised in these times, and both sides are just kind of come to agreement of this is how things are.
Emmanuel Isolay.
You know, like, white people don't recognize what's happening, and then black people just like, oh, you know, things have always been this bad and they're not going to get any better. And it's really hard and it's really sad that that's the reality we live in. And it's important, I think, for us to keep waking ourselves up and going, no, this isn't what's supposed to be. This isn't right. Even though this is how things have always been, and this is how things are probably going to continue to be for a while, we can't ever stop trying to push something, you know, greater. And I feel like that's, to me, that's like Martin Luther King's core message, is always pushing towards something greater and like perseverance. That's the word I think of.
Blair Paulus.
It's such a struggle because even the most well-intentioned white people have a really hard time getting past their comfort zone with it. You know, they say, well, We'd like to see this change, but we'd like to see this change gradually over time. You know, they want to put a 5-year plan together and eventually get to the point where things are more equal and representative for their students of color. And I'm saying, well, what about the 5 years between now and then? These students need that right now. You're going to graduate some students who won't have even seen those changes that you say that you understand that they need. So there's a real problem right there, in my opinion, as far as just, empowerment. Again, it comes back to empowerment, the ability to say, nope, right now it needs to change.
Emmanuel Isley.
I'd say that there's, very visible racism, which, to like people of my age and groups mean like, oh, when we talk in like history class about something about how Black people had different drinking fountains, that's an immediate in their head of, oh, that's wrong. That's downright, like, that's fundamentally like a bad thing. And my brain realizes that. But I think what's a bit more dangerous is like invisible racism. For instance, like, I think that's why a lot of people see like, the defamations of like the police as like this thing that they can't comprehend, because a lot of people don't realize that racism is so deeply built into like the idea of what America is. I mean, we're sitting on land that isn't ours. It's built on like 200 years of blood of people that, aren't white. Like, I think what a lot of people also miss, it also means re-education of white people.
Police brutality, with community support, or at best indifference, is a daily experience for Negroes in all too many areas of the South.
Classy Dudley, with a quote from Dr. King.
They live in the police state, which paradoxically maintains itself within a democratic republic. Under these conditions, an occasional lawsuit by the federal government, which may drag out for years through the courts, is no remedy. Indeed, it is sometimes worse than nothing. It demonstrates the brutality and weakness of federal power.
They're here to put us down.
Helen Davis.
It seemed like they tried to take us back into slavery days. And we're not, this is not the slavery days. We have to keep lifting our heads up and keep moving and let the law know that we're not going to take this. If we have to keep protesting, that's what we're going to do.
It's not that, this is just happening in the South.
Classy Dudley.
But when I see that quote, I see the placebo effect of what policing, the police system really is. We were taught as a community, like, these people are here to protect you. They're here to serve you. They're here to be this, like, safety net for all of you. But in reality, the foundation of policing was built on a racist, very racist system. Like, it was built, and prejudice in different areas too, but it was built to attack people of color. And as the years go by, like, things did change, but the system itself is still inherently racist.
Emmanuel Isley.
They suddenly don't view that as me trying to empower myself. They start to realize that as this, or they interpret that as, oh, that's an attack on the way I live. And that's an attack on the way that, like, on my country and on my core beliefs. And if they attack that, then what's next? And then that starts to topple into, them pushing back.
They are not learning them the right direction.
Helen Davis.
How to treat mental patients. They're not knowing how to treat people that have alcoholic addictions. They're not treating us right at all.
We have a hard time separating the person from the position.
Classy Dudley.
And my issue is this person is holding a position of power, and they might be in the way of getting true equity, or they may be stopping it, or they have the power to push it. And so we are holding them accountable to do that and to push whatever we're trying to push forward. And instead of them looking and reflecting on, like, I'm in power to do this, it's like, it's a personal attack on me. I frankly don't care who you are. You could be anybody, because at the end of the day, you could have an amazing heart and love all people and do all that stuff. But what happens when you retire and there's somebody else in? It's not about you. It's about that position that gives them that power. And what systems are we, or what laws or policies are we putting forth to make sure that no matter who's in that seat, that they can't abuse that power, or that we are always are able to hold those people accountable?
I was a security officer for 30 some years.
Helen Davis.
At a high school. And I also worked with the officer that was on the door with me. And it's a big difference between Illinois state of law and different from here from Minnesota law. The police officers that I dealt with in Chicago, they had a lot of issues. They was hiding a lot of stuff that they was doing behind closed doors that was not good for the community and also for our youth, the teenagers, and also for that our parents that was coming in out of the schools.
We have not made a single gain in civil rights without determining legal and nonviolent pressure.
Harrison Dudley, quoting Dr. King.
History is the long and tragic story of the facts that privileged groups seldom give up their privilege voluntarily. Individuals may see the moral light and voluntarily give up their unjust posture, but as Reinhold Niebuhr has reminded us, groups are more immoral than individuals. We know through painful experience that freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressors. It must be demanded by the oppressed. Frankly, I have never yet engaged in a direct action movement that was well-timed according to the timetable of those who have suffered unduly from the disease of segregation.
I think Malcolm X used to put it,
Blair Paulus,
as like if someone were sitting on a hot stove and they scream, you know, they're sitting on a piping hot stove, and then someone says, oh, you know, you need to get up. Yep, I need to get up right now. Okay, well, let's talk about that. We're going to set up a 5-year plan, and eventually, hopefully, what's going to happen is that gradually we're going to get you off of this hot stove, right? And you know, it's like, no, right now I need to get off of this hot stove, and nothing is going to stop me from doing that immediately.
We want liberty. We want justice.
We want justice.
The people
shouldn't have to
hold the state accountable.
Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America have given its colored people a bad check.
Helen Davis, with a quote from Dr. King.
A check that has come back marked insufficient funds, but we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So, we have come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and security of justice.
I talk a lot about, you know, what happened with George Floyd.
Classy Dudley.
And because they say like, well, we need more people of color in the police system to change that system. And yeah, that can help. But the culture, you can't change culture. And the culture is there with the police system that is racist. And so when we're looking at the George Floyd incident, you see one of those cops who got arrested was Black. So he was working with the Minneapolis NAACP before he became a cop because a cop had physically assaulted his sister. So he joined the system to change. And we see where he is now throughout that police culture. So it's just more than the trainings. It's more than giving more resources so they can educate themselves. Like, we literally need to rebuild this system. It's not radical. It's not scary. It's needed so we can all be safe. I mean, once we lift the people up at the bottom, we're lifting everybody up. I don't know if we'll look, you know, 50 years from now and see some of the laws we have in place right now, like pretextual stops, are even just to do anymore. I think even the way that our court systems are going about how we, you know, indict someone or even charge someone or the jury system, like that is all skewed and is skewed to the people in power. It's not skewed to the people of color here. It's not skewed to help the people who are in poverty here. If you look at our jail roster, it's all people below the poverty line. And you're telling me that only people below poverty are committing crimes? No, they can't afford bail.
I'm speaking of a guaranteed annual wage as a minimum income for every American family.
Emmanuel Isolay, with a quote from Dr. King.
so that there is an economic floor and that nobody falls beneath that. This may mean a radical, in a sense, redefinition of work. Maybe we've got to come to see that a mother who's at home as a housekeeper or a housewife is working. Maybe we've got to see that a fellow who drops out of school and later needs to go back to school is working.
Here in the Northland, one of the greatest barriers is housing stability.
Christina Trock.
Housing market is one of the oldest in the country, and the rental rates are higher than the national average in a lot of places. So it makes it hard for families to find affordable and safe housing. It's hard for families to afford homes because the jobs that are here are kind of at the minimum wage, unless you have advanced education. There's economic advantages to being in the North as opposed to the South when Martin Luther King was speaking about that. But now we're seeing that even those laws that are being changed to try to stop people from voting are creeping into the fabric of our society.
People don't always bring that up.
Jamara Kirk.
But those scars from poverty, some of the deepest scars you can have.
In a lot of situations, if a kid doesn't have like a lot of access to, I guess, extracurricular activities, like playing for a basketball team or something like that.
Kian Trock.
They won't get an opportunity for at least a while because their parents didn't have the money to be able to afford that for like a possible career.
Susanna Paleo Woodward.
When Black communities thrive, the rest of us thrive with them too.
We the people.
We the people.
We the people.
We the people.
Are so powerful.
Are so powerful.
Together.
Together.
There are points at which I see the necessity for temporary segregation in order to get the integrated society.
Jamara Kirk, quoting Dr. King.
I can point to some cases. I've seen this in the South in schools being integrated, and I've seen it with teachers' associations being integrated. Often when they merge, the Negro is integrated without power.
Black empowerment, I see many components to it.
Susanna Paleo Woodward.
But two main ones that I reflect the most was an economic empowerment and cultural empowerment. And when I refer to economic empowerment is the importance of investing and supporting Black-led businesses and organizations.
I think we should actually build each other up.
Xavier Davis.
Not cohesive, but the Black community needs to build themselves up together.
We always have been really productive when we were working together.
Harrison Dudley.
And when we fail to do that, we can see the discord and the lack of direction.
I think that empowerment really relies on our abilities to make our decisions for ourselves.
Blair Paulus.
To control our own destinies. Not to be allowing a white majority to do that for us. In particular, that quote by Martin Luther King about we don't want to be integrated out of power, we want to be integrated into power.
When we integrate...
Harrison Dudley.
And there's nothing wrong with integration, it's that we took it as a mean that we was moving out to something better and didn't think about the Black community. The theme of what... Mr. King wanted as a group, you know, we as a people can reach the mountaintops, you know, that always what I thought that good speech was about. And that does not mean that we are excluding ourselves from the general society. That's never the issue. It's that Black people got to start taking care of Black people. And then everything else would be okay.
The two or three positions of power which he did have in the separate situations passed away altogether.
Tatiana Kirk.
So that he lost his bargaining position, he lost his power, and he lost his posture, where he could be relatively militant and really grapple with the problems. We don't want to be integrated out of power. We want to be integrated into power.
I believe wholeheartedly in ownership.
Jamara Kirk.
Ownership over everything that you do, even if it is a job. You own those hours. The job doesn't own you. So change the thinking and take it to the next step. Working in a community where you can grow your business, have support, and be a leader, be a role model, so that we grow. Growth is our main objective, I believe, being connected and growing together. So
I do not own my own business, but it is an inspiration.
Tatiana Kirk, speaking of her father, Jamar Kirk.
He is somebody that I look up to in creating my future and creating generational wealth for us, as well as my future kids, and wanting to follow in his footsteps and do the same thing so that we can break generational curses.
I think with cultural empowerment, I always reflect on that people need to have a self sense of themselves, a self of pride.
Susanna Paleo Woodward.
Which I see in our community, that pride of being Black, the pride of that sense of passing ancestors' lives and traditions to the new generations. So that's the ones that I reflect the most, which I think are important.
Starting businesses, owning land.
Jamara Kirk.
Knowing what money is and how money really works is very, very crucial.
We have the ability to make all of these decisions about our education.
Blair Pallas.
About housing, about the laws, about the people who will govern our communities. You know, we need to be able to make those decisions ourselves. And as far as seeing that being passed down through the generations, I've certainly seen this in Native communities and in Black communities as well, where despite all of these oppressive forces surrounding us, despite our identities being commercialized and just turned in, you know, and disregarded in so many different ways, our communities have managed to maintain an authentic self.
Power to the people!
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 Our whole campaign in Alabama has been centered around the right to vote.
Dane Paulus, with a quote from Dr. King.
In focusing the attention of the nation and the world today on the flagrant denial of the right to vote, we are exposing the very origin, the root cause of racial segregation in the Southland. Racial segregation as a way of life did not come about as a natural result of hatred between the races immediately after the Civil War. There were no laws segregating the races then.
We have to be active.
Harrison Dudley.
We have to be as a collective. We have to be able to disagree with each other, but still move forward. And I think that has always been a concern of mine, that we haven't been able to be together and disagree and move forward.
Well, he was saying earlier.
Dane Paulus, speaking of his father, Blair Paulus.
Just talking about, you know, the right and the need to make our own decisions for ourselves, you know, so that we're governing ourselves. And I think an important part of that is dismantling the systems that are currently hindering so many people from doing that. You know, like so many political systems, particularly in America, are based completely around money. And money, you know, like on a larger scale for Black and Native communities, is a problem historically. And so getting into a position where we can change that and dismantle those systems so that type of thing can actually be realized is very important. Building intergenerational wealth, getting into positions where we are empowered to make that type of change is so important. Getting there and then changing it so that everybody has the opportunity to get there, because people are, you know, playing by like the white people's game and winning and getting there. But not everybody has the opportunity to do that. Not everybody has the, what's the word, like a guile, but like just the, yeah, I don't know. Not everybody is able to get to that point. So opening doors for everybody to, yeah, really get to that point where they can be self-actualized and actually have, their own power is really important.
The segregation of the races was really a political stratagem employed by the emerging bourbon interests in the South to keep the Southern masses divided and Southern labor the cheapest in the land.
Blair Paulus, quoting Dr. King.
You see, it was a simple thing to keep the poor white masses working for near starvation wages in the years that followed the Civil War. Why? If the poor white plantation or mill worker became dissatisfied with his low wages, the plantation or mill owner would merely threaten to fire him and hire former Negro slaves and pay him even less. Thus, the Southern wage level was kept almost unbearably low.
We need to start pushing that people policy first and not positions first, not, anything else first, really. It's just people first policies.
Classy Dudley.
So pushing on that and, you know, getting people elected who understand that. And that doesn't mean it all people of color understand that. Like, we have to be real with what we're working with and understand that we need to push our initiatives first. And how we do that is, you know, different from how they did it back in the day, for sure.
Exactly.
Harrison Dudley.
Need to be a new way of doing things. And that's the reason I advocate for the young to step into these roles. You know, they are in the mix of what's really going on and be responsible for you know, your part in making these changes. That's the big thing.
I'd like to say thank you to all the Black people making something of their lives. Finish school, finish college. Show these people you don't have to be white. I said you don't have to be white to have a great life. Be who you are. You're so beautiful inside. Never be ashamed and never ever hide. Let's raise our children to grow up with pride because this is our time to shine.
We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today.
Kian Trock with a quote from Dr. King.
We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. This is no time for apathy or complacency. This is a time for vigorous and positive action.
Getting the right information and making the connection between generations, expediting that information to the youth and using the youth as an advantage.
Jamara Kirk.
They can start businesses today. They can be the leaders that we've been missing out on for the past 10 to 15 years that we really, really need because the voices they're going to listen to are their own.
Every day is a constant battle when you're in my shoes, but I never hang my head down and I never lose. Centuries ago, you owned me, but now I fly free. I can be anything that I want to be.
We, as a family, my immediate family,
Harrison Dudley,
have to participate in those areas of political, those political areas that impact us directly and even indirectly. And I always stress that how important it is to get out and vote, that one vote does make a difference. And especially with my, with my immediate family.
I'm in this program called Youth in Government that's run by the YMCA.
Kian Trock.
And it's basically where a group of kids from mainly Minnesota for this branch get together every Monday and learn about how the government works.
In our family, we talk about lots of different issues that come up politically and how they will affect us as people of color, as Black people.
Christina Trock.
And, Kian deciding to go into the youth in government, I he wanted to go into that. And when I asked him why he wanted to go into youth and government, he said, because then he can change those laws.
They're the center of the communities.
Susanna Paleo Woodward.
The centers of making sure that those traditions continue.
My mom's been through like so much.
Emmanuel Isolay.
And a large portion of that is due to the color of her skin. And I've always tried to like follow in her footsteps of, you know, like going, like looking outside of my own perspective and really like having empathy for other people. And I've been trying to think about, oh, what has my mom gone through? Or how would she go through? Like, how would she, you know, process this information if she was listening to it? And basically, I've been trying to put myself in my Black mom's footsteps for a long time. And I realized that I can't do that because I'm never going to experience what she's experienced. And I think that realization is what a lot of like white people don't get. It's because a lot of white people try to go, oh, okay, like, oh, I can't imagine, you know, to be Black and have my life lived like I have to live my life like that. But they try to imagine it, but you just can't. It's something you have to either live or you don't.
I see it through the multiple generations of powerful Black women.
Susanna Paleo Woodward.
And that resilience of Black women in our communities, from grandmothers to mothers to daughters to sisters. And I think that that sense of pride, that sense of passing those stories and the legacies from ancestors to future generations.
When the class was young, I was always telling her that, you know, it's her time to step up.
Harrison Dudley, speaking of his daughter, Classy Dudley, president of the Duluth branch in NAACP.
And to be a leader, and I tried to instill in her some standards and some guidelines to go by. And I think that was a flashback to my past where my mom would always tell me that, you know, regardless of what we undertake, we got to undertake it with some morality, some honor, and endurance.
We must combine the toughness of the serpent and the softness of the dove, a tough mind and a tender heart.
And Susanna Paleo Woodward, quoting Martin Luther King. And that was an audio version of the documentary Dr. King, Words in Action, produced by Jeremy Gardner for the Duluth branch in NAACP. You can view the film in its entirety on Monday and participate in the other official online events by going to duluthnaacp.org/MLK. Again, duluthnaacp.org/MLK. I'm Robin Washington. The Regional News and Review is next. Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, the Bear Grease is coming up in a couple of weeks, but there was a tragedy on the training trail.
Yeah, for people who are familiar with Ryan Reddington, you know, he's a two-time winner of the John Bear Grease Sled Dog Marathon, and he's also raced in the Iditarod, finishing in the top 10 the last two winters, and he was out with his sled dog team training on a Bayfield County trail on Saturday when a snowmobiler was coming from the opposite direction and appeared to intentionally swerve at them. And Reddington's dogs, you know, they all had reflective gear and blinking harnesses, so it should have been easy for the snowmobiler to see them. But unfortunately, you know, one of his dogs was injured. Wildfire was injured and had to have surgery because a couple of his legs were broken after this snowmobiler swerved at him and hit him, even though Reddington tried to get out of the way by going off the trail. Now the Bayfield County Sheriff's Office is looking for whoever this might have been, but, you know, they weren't really able to identify this person or the make, model, or color of the snowmobile. So right now, it doesn't seem like there's really any way to find this person to hold them accountable. But, you know, I'm told that they were back out on the trail, you know, and that wildfire is recovering. I think it was two dogs that were injured. And there's been a GoFundMe page that's been set up to help with, you know, some of the costs related to that.
All right. Back on the COVID front, there's ongoing controversy about school mask mandates.
Yeah, you know, the surge of the Omicron variant has prompted state health and education officials this week to recommend that schools come out and require masks to help prevent exposure to the virus. They've also asked schools to follow, you know, testing programs to monitor for COVID, and also follow new guidance from the Centers for Disease Control that were issued earlier this month before kids came back. And that basically requires students, teachers, and staff to quarantine for a minimum of 5 days after a close contact with someone who has COVID, and then isolate for 5 days after first showing symptoms. And, you know, related to the mask requirement, last fall, the Superior School Board had made a decision to make masks optional for students who were eligible for vaccination, and the staff who work with those students. But it required masks for younger students, like in elementary school, who were ineligible. And it had dropped that requirement for elementary students after winter break, since kids 5 to 11 were authorized to get the Pfizer vaccine in late October. But with cases surging to record levels across the state and nation, the school board began requiring masks in all district buildings in Superior as of Wednesday this week. And WGIO-TV reported that 5 students and 1 staff member had positive COVID-19 tests in the week before winter break. But essentially, that shot up more than 10 times that amount, with 65 students and 20 staff members reporting positive COVID-19 cases after winter break, as many families were spending time together over the holidays.
And speaking of COVID numbers, what's the latest tally for the state?
Yeah, well, the state is seeing more than 10,000 new COVID-19 cases each day, and has essentially since the beginning of the year. And just for perspective, you know, back in November 2020, when we were seeing the height of the pandemic at the time, you know, we only had around 8,000 cases each day. And now we're averaging more than 9,500 cases each day. So the Omicron variant has really caused this virus to spread. It's much more contagious than the Delta variant. And unfortunately, too, this week, Wisconsin reached another unfortunate milestone, surpassing the number of hospitalizations that we saw in the peak of the pandemic in November of 2020. Now there's almost 2,300 people who have been hospitalized, mostly the unvaccinated, and there's only 63 ICU beds available across the state as of Wednesday, and only 3 were available across 26 hospitals in northwestern Wisconsin. So, you know, health officials are recommending, again, as everyone has heard, that the best thing that people can do for healthcare workers right now is to get vaccinated and get their booster dose.
All right. Well, Rick, last week we talked about a huge fire in Superior. There was another in Duluth this week.
Yes, there was. Firefighters in Duluth definitely fought a major fire this week. On Monday, the Esmond Building, formerly home to the Seaway Hotel, was destroyed in a fire. Duluth Fire Department crews battled the flames for nearly 7 hours. Not only did they battle flames, but they battled extreme cold with sub-zero temperatures and wind chills around 35 degrees below zero. The cause of the fire is unknown and remains under investigation by the Duluth Fire Marshal's office. The Esmond had already been condemned and set for demolition. In July, the Duluth Economic Development Authority approved a development agreement to demolish it and raise a new apartment building in its place.
And most importantly, no one was hurt, correct?
Yes, that's true.
Well, if we make it through fires and the sub-zero temperatures, how about dealing with noise if you live around the airport?
Well, according to Tom Werner, the executive director of the Duluth International Airport, the airport in Duluth receives a relatively low volume of noise complaints compared to many other airports. But even so, the airport is currently asking its neighbors to participate in a noise study. The airport actually began its current study in August of 2019, but the pandemic has slowed the collection of input usually gathered during public meetings. Werner said the goal of the noise study is to understand where noise can be hazardous to the uninvolved public neighborhoods outside the airport, and then also identify ways that they can reduce not only current noise, but reduce the impacts of possible future noise issues and incompatible uses of land around the airport. It's been about 20 years since the Duluth Airport conducted its last study. Werner also said that noise produced off airport property by civilian aircraft is generally found to be within acceptable limits. However, that's not the case for all the aircraft that use the airfield, namely the military F-16 jets flown by the 148th Fighter Wing. F-16s have smaller wings than civilian aircraft and thus require thrust and afterburner takeoffs. And afterburner takeoffs are very loud.
And we'll stay clear of those planes. We've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at DuluthNewsTribune.com and WPR.org. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. Our theme song was composed and performed by Bruce Nelson of South Range, and we had incidental music today from Scott Holmes. I'm Robin Washington. Have a good holiday and stay safe, everyone.